Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time, after a brief hiatus for the holidays, for the return of America's Most Haunted Radio. I am so excited to be back. How about you, Teresa?
Yeah, it seems like we've been off for a while. I'm happy to be back as well.
Did you have a festive holiday season?
We had a flu-filled holiday season, but it was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, how bad can it be?
Yeah, we all survived.
Thank goodness. Hey, well, we had a cool trip today. We'll talk about that perhaps later, but we are extremely excited, and I have a huge advantage. I was supposed to share my screener with Teresa, but I failed. I failed mightily. I get a big, fat F, perhaps an F minus. But I saw the first episode of tomorrow night's on Sci-Fi, Ghost Mine, and man, it is a ripper. Here's a little background. It was inevitable, taking two of reality TV's most popular subgenres, gold and ghosts, and mashing them together into Sci-Fi's Ghost Mine. I'll tell you what, I got all kinds of info here that I could read, but I'm going to kind of breeze through it because it just all sounds like reading. So there's this cool old mine, been shut down for 80 years, called the Crescent Mine. It's in the mountains of eastern Oregon. The current owner, who has no mining experience at all, his name's Larry Overman, a Texas oilman, and he had brought in a crew, and the crew bugged out, tramped in the parlance. I'm learning all this very quickly. Of the miners. They just up and bolted. They gave up. So a brand new crew has brought in under the guidance of Stan Papa Smurf, and by the way, he really does look like Papa Smurf, Griffith, and along with this new team of miners who are all minorly and grizzled and big long beards and superstitious, and they, you know, they snort and they fart and stuff. They also brought in, how cool is this, a pair of paranormal investigators, and that is who is with us this evening, Kristen Lumen and Patrick Doyle, and not only is one of them a woman, but they both have red hair, all of which is verboten in the minds. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Eric.
So, yeah, that's an amazing opening episode. It's really powerful. It's interesting. You learn a lot about gold mining itself, or at least as pertains to this particular mine and kind of the ins and outs of opening up a long, long dormant mine and a mine that has been plagued with tragedy over the years. But, you know, it's so alluring because in theory there's millions of dollars worth of gold and other precious metals left in there. But this crew, we don't really find out much about them unless you do later in the series. But the first crew, they just up and left. And I assume that's behind the reasoning of Larry, the owner, to bring you guys in. How did you get involved?
Well, I can start there. So, yeah, the first crew that Larry hired last season, and when I say season, I don't mean TV season. I mean mining season. And in Sumter, it's a very short season because it's up in the mountains of Oregon, and I think the mining season is only three and a half months long. It's that short of a season where these guys got to go in, get as much gold as they possibly can, and then get out. But last season's crew, like you said, tramped out. And they tramped out because they were scared. They got scared out. And it's really hard to scare these guys, these miner guys, because you got to think, these are rough guys, wilderness guys, these guys basically, they work inside the earth, like mile deep in the earth. And it's a dangerous job. So to scare these guys, it must take something very powerful, very dark, or whatever it is. And we heard some stories when we were there. And now Larry has the second crew coming in this season. And he basically called me. He found me online, being a Portland boy here. Found me online, gave me a call, asked me if I've ever done any investigating in a mine. I said, well, I don't think anyone has ever investigated in a mine. It takes so much to actually get into a mine. Like, we'll get into it later, but Chris and I had to go through a lot of training just to step foot onto the property of the mine. But Larry gave me a call, told me the story, and I was just instantly intrigued. I needed to do it no matter what it took. And Kristen and I, we've known each other for a good year and a half, 2 years now. Just through local events and stuff like that, we've kind of got together and discussed the paranormal and such. So when this came up, I thought you'd be the perfect fit to kind of round out the team. It's just like her and I, and we went to Sumter, and that's what the show starts out at.
Right. Kristen, yes, hello. By the way, that's my oldest daughter's name.
Oh, that's a good name.
And you spell it correctly.
Oh, I do? Okay, good. So she does too then.
Exactly. It's a mutual correct name spelling.
Yes.
So how did you feel? I mean, you kind of forget that, you know, there are still pockets and fairly large pockets of people, professions, and ways of life where there is still a lot of superstition involved. How did you feel about, being a woman coming into this environment? I know you say on screen that, I was kind of prepared, but it seemed like even with that, it kind of caught you off guard how unwelcoming some of them were.
Yeah, that was pretty intimidating when I first met them. I had heard of superstitions like that, but I didn't think that they still, held to them as much as they did. And so that was kind of surprising to me when I got there. I thought there might be a little bit of grumble about me being there, but I didn't expect that much.
And do you think that really was just founded in the traditions? In other words, there's nothing objective about it, is there? I mean, what possible reason other than superstition could there be for them to be so bent out of shape about a woman being there?
I don't know. You would think that they'd be happy. A bunch of men stuck up on a mountain.
Yeah, those superstitions.
Not the response I was expecting.
Right.
Yeah. There's old folklore of the only reason women, ever went into a mine was to identify a body, and that's actually not folklore. That's true. And then there's another story I heard about an Irish princess visiting a mine and being told not to go in there while the miners were working, and she did anyways, and then the next day it collapsed. So I heard a couple different stories on why they felt that way about redheads, especially redheaded women.
So, I mean, does this mean I don't know that much about mining history myself. I mean, does this mean that there just really have never been woman miners? Is that just one field that just there have never been women?
I think there have. I mean, there has to have been. I mean, there has to be women miners. I think any team decides who they feel comfortable with, though, that's going to be on their team. And this team in particular were gentlemen who've done this for a very long time, and they kind of held a little bit tighter to these superstitions than maybe some other groups of miners.
Well, we have a woman who with us, Teresa, who's pretty used to, battling some of these prejudices herself, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny, Kristen, I come from a coal mining, not gold mining, but a coal mining family here in Ohio. My grandfather and all my relatives on my mother's side were coal miners and moonshiners. So and they're from an area called Brookville. Brookville, Ohio, where the mine caught on fire and, like 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and it's still burning. Not unlike Centralia, but unfortunately I didn't get to discuss much of the mining business with my grandfather and his relatives, but I remember they were very superstitious, and my grandfather was very into the paranormal as well, and, I mean, there were just all sorts of things. I was too young to really know what their specifics were about women, except that they just didn't belong there. They belonged in the kitchen or whatever. But I got to give you kudos for this. I mean, first of all, the concept of the show is different and amazing. And, yeah, I mean, you're just going against every single stereotype and everything that they don't want in a mine, there you are. So this is going to be interesting. I wish I would have seen the screener, but I'll have to watch the show tomorrow. So.
Along with me, I haven't seen the show yet either.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't want to. The thing I don't want to give away is there is a very powerful ending or near ending to the episode. I imagine we probably don't want to give that away. But as far as viewers go, I'm telling you, I really kind of did not know what to expect. But it's a very interesting combination of these dual kind of paths that then come together, and it's interesting to see how you guys kind of had to tiptoe around the miners, at least in this first episode. You have the sense at toward the end of the episode that you guys had pretty well established yourselves, and when you do have the session where you review the evidence that you had found to that point, and I think that was after you'd been in three times, and boy, they sat up and took notice.
Yeah, this was the most difficult evidence reveal I think we've ever done in our life.
From what we see, you know, editing is always a really relevant and important factor. We were talking about that earlier today. We met with some friends who just concluded their first show, the six episodes of their first show, and we were talking about some of the editing issues. And I mean, Kristen, that's a really good point, the fact that you haven't seen it. So, I mean, you know, on the one hand, you were there, right? I mean, it's your life. You lived it. Mm-hmm. But as far as how it actually comes out on the screen, you know, you really don't know until you see it. But what was really amazing was, as Teresa said, you in particular, Krista, but you too, Patrick. I mean, you guys, you were quiet and respectful, but you were also confident, and you knew you had a job to do, and you weren't going to let them push you around, and you were again polite about it, but I think it was very important that you did kind of assert yourselves in a quiet way, and I'm sure the respect factor went way up once they did see some of this evidence. Can you let us know, perhaps in a oblique manner, some of the things that we're going to find out as things unfold throughout it's six episodes, is that right?
Six episodes, okay. That's correct.
Can you let us know kind of what path things are going to take, at least to a certain extent, down the line here? I'm hooked already, I'll tell you.
Tricky question there. Yeah, like Chris and I haven't seen episode one, so you got the advantages on us there. And like you said, we lived it, but we don't know how it's going to be. But we were there the whole mining season, so we were there a good couple months.
I will say one thing, though, that what will be interesting to watch, it was really interesting for Patrick and I in our research, was how the town itself was connected with the mine and how that mystery just kind of kept unfolding and unfolding. And so that was really amazing.
Because we can tease that there is a kind of mysterious group, the Masons, involved with some of the stuff that we find, and that's kind of already kind of been
which
in the trailer out there.
Their involvement at the time of going, starting our research, or how much they were involved and how much they were involved in the town itself. So that's actually, it was really interesting to learn about.
Because like it's how you started off, like when you first set up the show there. Yeah, this mine's been closed for 80 years. So the big mystery is, why has it been closed for 80 years? And why did they just sell it to Larry and just say, here, it's yours, do with it what you will? And why would they leave this active gold mine just sitting there vacant for so long? And what was it that scared a mining crew away without collecting that gold?
Do you guys get to the bottom of the details of that, or is it left more kind of general?
I don't know how much we can really get into that right now. It's like it's one of those things. You really got to like watch it, because it is like Kristen was saying, Sumter is such an amazing town. It has such a rich history and just amazing, like, tragic history as well. That I think people are, the viewers are really going to be interested in Chris and I's journey through the history and figuring things out.
Yeah, in this first episode, you do meet with the woman who's the local historian, and she does mention the Masons, and she says, you know, not only did they have their own cemetery, but that they owned much of the town, at least at one point.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, everyone's kind of in awe of that whole society of the Masons.
Yeah,
so that was kind of, you know, a mystery within itself.
Circles.
Sumter is currently only, back in the day it was 3,500 people, but currently it's just under 200 people, so it's kind of technically it is a ghost town. But the Masons are still involved with the town.
Interesting. Strange.
So if you think that there's a – Kristen and I come up against a lot of brick walls. I'll say that much. not just the miners.
Literally and figuratively.
Rock wall.
I have a question for you, for both of you, Pat and Kristen. And again, remember, all I've seen is the teases that have been on sci-fi and online, so I don't know much about it. But when I am a paranormal investigator, so I know how things go. Never done it in a ghost in a mine before. But when they brought you in, when the owner of the mine brought you in, when sci-fi decided to do the show, what was their final outcome that they wanted from you? Did they want you to find out if it was haunted? Did they want you to document evidence of it being haunted? Did they want you to try and get rid of any spirits that were down there? What was their outcome that they wanted for you to go in there, besides obviously making a reality TV show? But what was the final outcome? Did they want you to cleanse the mine of spirits, or just document it, or find out there's nothing there? What was their goal to have you come in at all, to have any paranormal investigators come into this mine with all the superstitions and the dangers, physical and spiritual dangers that might be surrounded by this? And, you know, to break the mold of what they normally have and to reopen this mine, what was their goal that they wanted you to accomplish?
Well, I guess I could jump here and answer that. Because Larry the mine owner, he's the one who contacted me. And you got to understand, this isn't your traditional reality show. And those who will see, when you see the show, you'll see that it's not your traditional show. And Chris and I became a part of it only because Larry contacted us. And we were called in there to help him. He was looking for answers to why his miners tramped out. And basically he told us, like, can you get rid of them? And
yeah,
we told him, like, well, that's not what we do. We could go in there and kind of figure out what's going on. See if that's why Kristen, we come at it two different ways. So we were able to tell, is this an environmental issue? Is there something really going on? And if there is something really going on, is it going to harm the miners? Is it going to, because they're already working in a dangerous environment that they're facing death like almost every day, getting slapped and all this other stuff. So if there is something dangerous in this mine that's paranormal, will it harm his miners? That's the only reason we were brought in. And we went into this, Chris and I went into this, not even knowing that it was an operational mine, that there was going to be a whole mining crew that we had to be tiptoeing around.
And when I come out at investigations, I graduated psychology and took paranormal psychology. And so I come at it from what the brain sees, what the brain wants to see, what the brain manifests. And so I thought this would be an amazing opportunity. I mean, what a wonderful research experiment to go into a mine where you have so many environmental factors playing into what could possibly be a paranormal experience. You have lack of oxygen. You have darkness, which is already an innate fear for most people. You have disorientation, lack of sleep, altitude. I mean, all of this kind of stuff can play in to having seeing something or feeling something. I mean, you go back into that mind so far back, you're afraid no matter, you know, who you are. I mean, these guys have been doing it for a long time, so I know they're probably pretty good with it and they're used to mostly everything. But those lights go out, you know, who knows what your brain's going to make up or, you know, make you see or think you hear or something. So it was really amazing for me, and that's why I got involved in the whole project. Even though, you know, I knew I'm a little bit claustrophobic and was a little bit worried about going in myself. But it was really amazing to me because, you know, in that kind of field experiment almost, you get to kind of knock out all the environmental factors or the physiological factors that could possibly play into these men believing that they're seeing something or feeling something. And that was really a big reason why I got involved.
That's very interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found in terms of those environmental factors? Were you able to isolate some of that out?
Yeah, I think some of it, like phantom mists. I mean, we discovered some, you know, photographs that could have been humidity. It doesn't necessarily mean it was an apparition. Sometimes. When the gentleman, they didn't really, I can't really give too much away, obviously, but we also went in there every time we did an investigation with equipment to be able to, the oxygen levels. So that helped too. You know, if the oxygen is getting too low, what's the point of doing investigation? Because you can have, you know, auditory hallucinations. And optical hallucinations. If you don't have enough oxygen, you can start seeing things. Your mind plays funny tricks on you. Also in the darkness and that kind of stuff. So there were some things that we were able to explain away, but obviously there are some things we weren't.
Now, let me ask you, though, if this is a condition that's prevalent in mining in general, with the lack of oxygen and everything, wouldn't there be paranormal reports from every mine? Wouldn't all miners report, like, paranormal activity if it was really something with low oxygen levels or something like that? Wouldn't you feel there was more reports of haunted mines, or is it maybe that there just isn't a lot of active mines or we're not hearing about it, they keep it hush-hush? I would imagine if it's common, you know.
Well, that's where the superstitions come in. That's the whole superstition of the Tommyknockers. Tommyknockers are ghosts to miners, but they don't see them as ghosts, like I guess we would see ghosts, like normal paranormal investigation, and the traditional sense would see it. This is a superstition that's very deep in their culture, and they welcome these spirits. They actually respect them because these spirits are said to protect them and also lead them to gold if they respect the spirits. And there's some superstitions where you're not supposed to whistle in a mine because that's disrespecting the Tommyknockers, the spirits. Some miners leave offerings of alcohol and food at the opening of the mine to make the Tommyknockers and the spirits happy, so the next day that they'll lead them to the gold. So there are a lot of claims when you look at mining, but these guys aren't open with telling the stories because it's just part of their way. It's just part of their culture. And they're not the type of guys who go around telling ghost stories, really.
Yeah, at the beginning of the episode,
tough men.
when the word ghost is mentioned, I don't think you guys were there yet. This was kind of pre your arrival. And the foreman was mentioning, you know, that you were coming and what was going on. And definitely the men had been hearing stories in town already. And then the word ghost was actually mentioned, and there was this interesting combination of derisive and nervous laughter from them all. That, aha, that is very telling.
And all these guys, you have like different levels of superstition beliefs within these guys. You've got the really old timers who have been doing this their entire life who are more superstitious than the younger guys who are just kind of like put it off, and all they really want to do is get in there, get the gold. And Eddie says it in the trailer, it's like nothing's getting in the way between him and that gold. And that's the truth with those guys. They'll just ignore every sound, every shadow, everything that pushes and bumps them because they have one gold. It's that whole gold fever. It's more powerful than the paranormal to them.
And even more so because, as you said, their time frame is so short. I mean, think about it. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
A whole year's worth in about 3 months or so.
Yeah, because the snow up there is incredible. Like right now, you can't even go up to that mine right now unless you have like a snowmobile. And even that's dangerous because it's a sheer drop-off when you go like 30 feet out of the portal. That's the opening of the mine. Come out of the portal, you go 30 feet and you're going straight down a cliff. So it's
wow.
dangerous up there. Yeah.
So did you have to build a road too? I mean, there has to be some kind of trail at least, right? Or is there a road to get up there?
And that's a story on its own, and Kristen loved going up that road every single day because we lived down in town, she and I. And the miners lived up in town, but yeah, she and I had to go up and down that mountain every day, no matter what time of day or night. And that, Kristen can get into it, but that was probably the worst road, if you could call it a road, we've ever driven in our life.
Graybeard was saying that was the worst road he's ever seen his entire lifetime.
Yeah.
I was like, geez, if he says that, it must be really bad.
Yeah, because we were driving a big truck, and there are some times when Kristen could look out her window, and you don't see the ground. You're just looking down that cliff.
Oof. I know that feeling, and
yeah.
It is not a good one.
Yeah. So it was scary, and there was cows on the road sometimes and other animals.
How did the weather hold up for you? Did you have a lot of rain? Because I would think that would make it much worse.
It was a good mix.
We actually did have rain while we were there.
Yeah, it was very drastic. It changed so quickly. As soon as like the fall just started teasing us, it got really cold up there. So we went from wearing just T-shirts and jeans to wearing five layers of clothing. It was such a drastic change. There was even like a mini tornado one day.
Wow.
It knocked down a bunch of trees and like basically crushed a few like RVs in town.
God, I think of the when I'm picturing the scenes in Lord of the Rings, you know, where they either have to go into the frickin' mine, the mine of death, or stay outside in the snow and the avalanches and the wind. It's not an easy choice, I would imagine.
Yeah, and the mine is no pleasant environment as well. If you can imagine, it's just tight, you're surrounded by rock, it's the darkest dark you could possibly imagine. When you're a mile in this mine at 8,000 foot elevation, I think the temperature got down into like the 30s and 40s way back there, and even though it was like in the 60s and 70s outside.
I would think you would have to bring in oxygen between the mine itself and the elevation. I mean, it looked like you guys were just breathing free. Are there times when you had to bring in oxygen?
No, never
wore
oxygen. We had like a couple tanks there, but Kristen and I never brought it in.
So
it appears,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it appears in this first episode that you're kind of trying to work your way around the miners and not, you know, inconvenience them or freak them out. Did you get to a point where you could kind of coexist, or did you just really always have to stay out of their way?
After the initial meet and greet, and their shock of having to work along paranormal investigators. They really are. I mean, they're just great, great guys. And so eventually you'll see it's not as rough as it was in the beginning. I think we kind of knew that we needed each other. We needed them to survive too. I mean, if anything happened to Patrick and I, those were the guys that were going to get us out of there, you know?
Yep. And they came to us too after a while. It's like once that kind of trust built up and they saw that we were there for a reason, they came to us and basically told us, like, look, if you ever feel dizzy or if you start getting, if you ever, like, they were just telling us, basically, if you guys ever feel weird or feel uncomfortable or you feel sick, let us know and we'll get you out of here as soon as possible. So these guys really looked out for us. So we really didn't need the oxygen tanks because they were our meters, really. Like, we had all the equipment, but these guys living in this and working in this environment for so long, they had like a sixth sense of what was around them. They knew what the noises were. They knew what the levels were. They knew what every smell was. So if they sensed anything wrong, they said, okay, we got to get out of here. And we listened.
I'm sure you did. Well, that you see that in the first episode. There is an extremely vivid incident of a miner's sense of what's going on around him. And, I mean, I'm not sure if you learn more about that episode or that experience in later episodes, but, you know, it appears, based on the first episode, that that saved two miners' lives, that response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their sixth sense is amazing. It just, and it comes down, it comes to them just knowing their environment so well. And they just, if you think about it, these guys are usually in there alone or a pair of two or just three or four. So they're a tight-knit group, and they just work in such a great, they work in such a great team. It's amazing how well they work together. It's like, think about the Seven Dwarfs, those little miners, how they work together. It's like a funny parallel, but, yeah, these guys work in harmony so well. They just don't whistle while they work because that's bad omen. Tommyknockers won't like that.
And they don't find huge fist-sized diamonds everywhere.
I wish they did. Kristen and I would have high-graded them there. There's another mining term, high-grading.
And what does that mean?
That basically means you steal from them. You steal their gold. You high grade them.
You participate in the process in an unplanned manner.
Yeah.
Oh, so tell us about some of the other terms that you learned. I imagine they just become second nature pretty quickly.
They just have interesting names for everything. Just in the mine itself, like you got the portal is the entrance. You got the drift is actually what you call the mine itself. That's the drift. A shaft, a lot of people say mine shaft, but that's not a proper term. A shaft is actually a vertical hole for more air and stuff like that.
Ah, I see.
And the face is what the miners are actually working on, so that's the end of the mine. So they always go to the face to do their work. And then you have the word that Kristen screwed up for the jackleg.
No.
I forget what
you called it. We don't need to tell that story.
But the miners had a good laugh when Kristen was trying to point to the jackleg, and she called it something completely different.
Not appropriate for radio.
Yeah.
One can only imagine.
I didn't get the lingo down quite as well as Patrick did.
Yeah, and there's Bucket, who you don't get the lingo from. The way he speaks, you don't understand anything he's saying.
Yeah, I was wondering what language he was speaking. On the screen, they had up his translation, you know, of what he was saying. The words on the screen so you could follow along.
After like 3 weeks, you start to pick up maybe 50% of the words Bucket is saying. But
it's a cadence that's so odd. It's not even necessarily the pronunciations. It's kind of the way he kind of mumbles. he
calls it just fast talking.
Is that what it is? Where's he from?
Right now, he's, last I heard from him, he was in Reno.
But he's from that area, though, generally.
Yeah, these guys are tramp miners. These guys are tramp, most of them are tramp miners, so they go where the work is.
How does, other than just, you know, heredity or I suppose, just geography. How do people get into it? It was actually interesting to hear the two greenhorns and their story. It was really kind of a pretty important second chance at life for both of them, it sounded like.
Yeah, Jay and Jamal. And, yeah, you're right. That they come from two different places in life, and, yeah, this is a totally different change from it. And they're hoping it helps out with their family and
right.
a new way of life for them. And so it's definitely interesting just working beside them, too, because we, Chris and I, were technically greenhorns as well.
A while back you mentioned that just even to walk in the portal, and before there was a portal, I think you guys went in before they even built it, the first time anyway, didn't you? When you went with Larry?
Yeah, it was there, but they had to be made structurally strong so we could actually walk into it.
So what was some of that training that you had previous to going in at all?
Well, we had to get MSHA certified, and that's Mining Safety and Health Administration training. So that was hours and hours of classroom and on-site training. And to put it, like to sum it up, it was basically, we're going to teach you everything possible so you don't die in a mine.
Everything that could go wrong, pretty much?
Basically, yeah, and they tell you in graphic detail, too. If you do this wrong, this is going to happen. If you do that wrong, this is going to happen. But it's helpful, though. We need to know that stuff because it's an environment that I don't think any paranormal investigator has gone into. And I think it's because of the training we had to endure to step foot in there.
Well, it's so alien.
What's that?
I was just saying that environment, I mean, it really is so alien. And Kristen, you mentioned a while back that you had a touch of claustrophobia. That was one of the first things I thought of when I was watching the episode.
Yeah.
My God, you know, if anyone, because my wife has fair, I mean, you know, not severe, I wouldn't call it a phobia, but, you know, she gets pretty antsy in closed-in environments, and sometimes it can bother her more than others, but... I mean, most people have some, you know, discomfort with being in that. It's not just, I would think, for me, it would be just be how small and closed in it is, but how deep you are. I mean, because what can you do? I mean, if something happens, there's no shortcuts. You got to travel that whole distance back out, right?
Yeah. I kept having to repeat myself, mind over matter, mind over matter, mind over matter every time I went in there, because you do, you know, you put yourself in that situation and you start thinking things, what could happen if this happens, what happens if this happens, and it was tough,
but then you see something shiny in the wall and that would distract you.
Yeah, I got a little bit of gold fever lost in there that helped me, go back in.
And then it's Patrick, look at this.
It's a
paranormal
nugget.
It's something shiny.
A paranormal nugget. Woo! I have two questions for you. Were the miners, since I didn't get to see the screener, I heard it was really good, but I didn't get to see it because my partner neglected to give it to me.
Because he sucks.
I know, I love how you keep repeating that.
Were you?
Because he tramped out with it.
He tramped out with it, right. Were you guys actually investigating in the mine while there were miners around you, or was it just the production crew, or was it like a safety crew? Were they actually mining while you were investigating, or was that done at a separate time?
No, there was different times.
While we were investigating, we really couldn't have any noise, obviously, and that was one of the biggest things while we were in there. You know, and if we heard something, we had to really make sure nobody else was in there with us.
Yeah.
But
Did
any of the miners participate at all in the investigation? You know, sometimes you might have somebody from the location you're investigating join in just to see if they can get any sort of reaction. Did any of them participate at any point at all in any of your investigations, or were they just not there at all while you were doing your thing?
Well, I'd say what's great about this investigation, which goes to, gets to your answer, is that Chris and I were on site this whole time while the miners were working. So when they experienced something, Chris and I could be in there within seconds to investigate that claim. So it was that quick. So there was no lag time. So we'd asked the miners, do you mind if we do an investigation real quick to see what this experience was? And a lot of them were willing to step aside just for a little bit. And they really were a great help when it came to figuring stuff out. I mentioned a little bit before, like, we'd play them an EVP, and we'd say, the first thing we asked is, like, is this anything you've ever heard in a mine? So they were one of our greatest resources for either debunking or substantiating any evidence that we were collecting.
Wow.
No, go ahead.
What were you going to say? They worked with us as well because I don't think they planned on becoming participants in our investigation, but it kind of turned out that way because they were in the mine. And once anything did happen and we wanted to do an investigation right away, they didn't want to be in there anyways at that time. You know, they had just come running out of there. So
yeah. There were a couple of instances of that.
I can imagine. Now, the two of you, besides being paranormal investigators and having to go to this location, this very odd, unusual location to do paranormal investigating, I don't know about your personal life, so I don't know, are either of you married? Do you have families that you had to leave and say, because I know I'm a mother and I'm a ghost hunter, and obviously the haunted housewife. I have a hard enough time telling my husband and my kids I'm going ghost hunting, let alone I'm going ghost hunting in a mine. For 3 months. I can only imagine, besides the inherent time away in the danger, I don't know what is your, if you want to comment on, or if you're married, your family, what it was like to have to go into this situation and leave them behind, or even just your normal lives. I mean, Patrick, you're an author and an illustrator, I see. You've got other things to just give up for 3 months at a time to go and do this crazy thing. How did that go over?
It was a great life experience, that's for sure. And I see it as a new avenue for paranormal investigating because it really was a test of everything I've ever learned in the past. It especially tested the equipment that we use. I went through the normal equipment that we use, K2s, millimeters, voice recorders, cameras, IRs, and full spectrum cameras. They got beaten up in this environment.
What about your own? Don't you develop your own equipment as well? Did you use any of your own things that you worked on and developed while you were shooting?
Yeah, I had to because the equipment that we brought in, the standard equipment, was getting destroyed. So I had to actually build my own equipment to actually work in that environment and survive that environment. So it was a necessity, and I think it's one of those things. I'm hoping that the investigation that Chris and I do within this mine will help move the field just a little bit further.
Excellent. I cannot wait to see the show, which I'll have to wait till tomorrow, I guess.
Yep, so do we. We haven't seen any of that. But I can answer your question. I am married, no kids, just a dog. She's the dog is our child. And, I'm an author, and I illustrate my own books. But, my wife is just awesome she supports all my hobbies. And when this came up, she knew it was something that I was really passionate about. And she saw how important it was to me, so she said, get the hell out. No, she said, go do it and just be safe.
Which apparently you were.
I was just going to say that I have my mother is actually, and I probably got this from her, she's actually severely claustrophobic, so it was mostly difficult for her. Then she was having nightmares for months of tarantulas and dinosaurs chasing me in these mines. So
yeah.
I wanted to actually answer, Teresa, your question, which was certainly relevant and good. The kind of the structure of how this was set up is they actually go into the mine in the daytime when the miners are there, and they set up a network. I forget how many cameras. There's quite a few static cameras.
We had eight cameras to our DVR system, and that was just setting those up was a test of its own because those cameras aren't made for a mine. So we had to basically string as many cables as we possibly could from our paranormal investigating shack that they built for us into the mine and going back as far as we could until we lost signal. So I think we got back pretty far, like 1,000 feet or something like that, with our DVR system. But we had to make sure all the couplings were not getting soaked from the environment. We had to make sure the cameras weren't going to get rocks dropped on them. And we had the miners going in and out of that mine all day and night. So, well, not night, but all day. And they're carrying some like fin hose, which are very sharp instruments. They're just not paying attention to cables and cameras like that. So there was the whole possibility of them like destroying the cameras and not knowing about it.
And then there's the dynamite.
Yeah.
Yep. The boomsticks. And that was a whole different experience, too, because, yeah, I've never been around it. Like, besides 4th of July, I've never been that close to high explosives.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive the way they opened up the, cleared out the opening there. There were some big booms going on.
Oh, yeah, and it wakes up, because we're 8,000 feet up, so when that thing goes boom, everyone hears it. Because the town of Sumter is, how far was Sumter from the Crescent Mine? So it was...
I know it was a good 45-minute drive.
Yeah, mostly vertical. But yeah, when the booms go off, the town of Sumter hears it.
It's a very vivid picture. I'm really eager to see more, and it's very well done. The editing looks really good. It's dramatic. You know, I was really glad looking at a screener that I didn't have to wait through commercials because I really wanted to see what was going to happen next. And then so the final part of that setup, Teresa, is they have all these cameras set up, and then they're monitoring those cameras from their paranormal investigation shack. I like that terminology.
The PI shack. Yep.
Outside. So then when something happens, they can go, you know, dashing in. So I forget exactly what had happened when you guys went running in and said, let's meet them. Let's meet them at the mouth. I guess that was the big main thing that happened, which were you allowed to talk about that? Because it's amazing and dramatic.
I think we just leave that for tomorrow night.
All right, we'll leave it for tomorrow night. So, but that involves a Tommyknocker. So that is super cool. I love that term. I know it's one of the Stephen King books I have not read. Or, I don't know, did they make a movie out of that one? They've made a movie out of all of them. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
That book's all about aliens, and, yeah, we didn't deal with aliens. So he made his own little story out of Tommyknockers.
So he wasn't talking about mind ghosts.
He was talking about something else.
Okay. Well, that's neat, that relationship that you see, and you see how it plays out, and you see why... at least part of why they are so superstitious, because it's so hard to draw the line. It's a gray area between what is just super heightened senses and what is subjective or paranormal. I mean, that line is very hard to define, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. These guys are amazing. Just the way they sense things. The mind talks to them, they told us.
And you can see it. I mean, there's all the different kinds of sounds. I mean, there are warnings, and whether those warnings be naturally caused or otherwise, I mean, it becomes extremely obvious early on in the first episode. How important it is to heed those and to be attuned to your senses and within this strange environment with all these echoes. And, I mean, my gosh, how... I imagine it was really quite a challenge to account for all these physical anomalies that you had to deal with, just in terms of the echoes and the moisture, like you were saying, and just stuff falling from the ceiling at any given time. It had to be very challenging. So, did you come away with a more positive feeling about mining, the endeavor of mining, or did it kind of scare you away from it?
I walked away with a new respect for it. I mean, I never really thought about it. I didn't even, I never even thought that this was still, existing with a group of men going into the earth. And, I just didn't think about it that way. But I have a huge, huge admiration for these guys who put their, lives at risk every day. And, it still scares me. I mean, I'm not going to be going in, mines looking for gold anytime soon. it was just amazing that these guys do this for a living.
Yeah, I have the same respect for these guys. They're just amazing, guys, amazing team. And, I would love to, continue what we've been doing. It's like, I think we're on a good track here with how we're investigating in this environment. And I still have a lot more to learn. And now that Chris and I are kind of more used to the environment and kind of know what we're going up against, I think we could develop some new equipment to actually help us if we could get back into a mine. And we'll definitely pack better because we didn't bring the right clothes a lot of the time, not knowing that it was 30 degrees at the face of the mine.
Live and learn.
Might bring a parka or some scarves or something.
Well, that brings up a fairly obvious question, and that is, you've done, obviously you've completed the work for these six episodes. I have no specific knowledge at all, but I assume you were in some way successful in facilitating the experience of the miners. Even in that first episode, you are reassuring to them. You say, if whatever's in there, we don't think it's out to get you, at least. Even just in the first episode, I think you'd already had quite a positive impact on them. But, the question is there room for another season? I mean, I would think your work is kind of done there, or would you go back there, or would you go to a different mine? I mean, are there plans to continue the series, for a new seasons?
With that, I have to say you have to watch all six episodes, and I'm pretty sure that you'll be given the answer.
Oh, the hook is set.
Yeah, we're only at episode one, so yeah, we've got five more to go there, and we have all six to still see. So yeah, we'll talk after.
As
six.
Does Teresa. Have we mentioned that?
Yep. So we're all in the same boat here.
Interesting. Well, as I was saying, I thought it was really well done, very interesting. Just in the 140, however many minutes, I learned quite a bit about mining. I picked up some details, and just in that short time, just seeing it on TV, I have a better understanding and appreciation for what they do and what's involved in it. And you guys, like I said, wow, you guys had balls of steel to take this on and to obviously stick it through till the end. And I am very, very eager to see how all that comes out. But based on that first episode, it's very dramatic. It's very interesting. The interpersonal action, the relationships are interesting to see how that unfolds, that dynamic, and within the group too, just within the mining group, to see the differences in their personalities and how they approach things. And I think you guys were the right guys. It just really seems to took a lot of fortitude to get in there and to make it happen. And you had to certainly know what you were doing. And we absolutely very eager to see how it all unfolds. And excellent talking to you. You know, in ways, in a lot of ways, it's hard. Of course, it's harder to talk. You know, before a series starts, because no one's seen it, and you know, you guys aren't exactly sure what you should or should not say. You know, it's not like you can talk about previous episodes. Well, at least we could talk about previous episodes, that kind of thing. So, but I think we were able to kind of frame it pretty well, and all of a sudden we've been talking for an hour. It's amazing.
Wow. Well, it's been great talking to you, and yeah, I really hope that people not only just enjoy the show, they do learn about these guys, and it's opening up a whole new world of not only paranormal investigating, but just a whole new world of mining on its own. It's like Chris and I learned so much the time we were there, and I hope that people would just really enjoy it and fall in love with these guys, and that by episode 6, everyone is talking like Bucket.
He had to bring in a translator for you all.
Yep.
That is great. Teresa, any questions or comments?
Yeah, just before we go off, let's tell people when the show airs, what channel it's going to be on, and how people can get more information on you and follow you if you have a Twitter or Facebook. But let's tell everybody about the show, when it airs, and about Kristen and Patrick and how you can follow along and follow along with Ghost Mine. So let's give you some information out there so everyone can follow along to their new favorite paranormal show.
All right. Well, I can certainly do that. It's on Sci-Fi, and
I'm
it will be.
I'm Sam, Eric.
Oh, okay.
Patrick and Kristen.
Okay.
Not you.
Everyone wants to hear me.
So, Sci-Fi tomorrow night, Wednesday the 16th at 10 o'clock. That's 10 o'clock Eastern Time, and 10 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Central, and. Yeah, I'm excited. And if you want to get in touch with me, I'm on Facebook. It's patrickfacebook.com. What is it? Facebook.com, Patrick Doyle, / Ghost Mine. And, yeah, you'll find me there.
And you're on Twitter, too.
Oh, yeah, Twitter, I am @ Patrick H. T. Doyle.
And you can find me just on Facebook. What?
I was just saying, I couldn't find you on Twitter.
Oh, no, I'm not on Twitter. I will be on Twitter here coming up soon, but I'm not on Twitter yet. You can find me on Facebook right now, at Kristen Lumen, Ghost Mine.
And, of course, there's an interesting, lots of good information. There's the talk like a miner terminology. Cool list, the interesting list of mining superstitions, bios on both these guys, and also of the miners. So that's really interesting too. Kind of the way it was presented to me, just because I assume it's really just because we are a paranormal show. It was more like, you know, you guys were where the action is, and of course you are, but every one of the miners is very much involved with the show too, and they become very strong personalities quickly. So it's that interplay that's really interesting. So just go to the sci-fi.com site, and lots of cool information on Ghost Mine. And again, it will be starting tomorrow. It'll be on for I assume it's 6 in a row, Wednesdays at 10. On Sci-Fi, and that's a good time slot, too, because you're coming right out of Ghost Hunters.
Yep, Ghost Hunters Season 9 starts tomorrow as well, so we follow Jason Hawes and the team.
That is an excellent lead-in, I would say.
Yeah, great.
So they must
gonna
like
great,
you.
It's going to be just going to be a great night of paranormal TV, I think. So I hope everyone who's interested in not only the paranormal, just in mining and just great television will be Sci-Fi tomorrow, starting at 9 for Ghost Hunters and 10 for us.
All right. Well, absolutely hope the show is a huge smash, and there is no choice but to do another season, whether you're whatever that may entail. So great talking to you, and we wish you only the best. And we'd love to talk to you again down the line and see after you've had a chance to learn more about all of this.
When we can say more.
Reveal more.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is another episode of America's Most Haunted. It was great to be back after a few weeks off for the holiday season. And we got all kinds of interesting shows lined up, including one I know Teresa is extremely excited about, but we won't mention that yet, but that's coming up. There is a new and interesting subgenre that involves comedy as well as ghost hunting, so we will be looking into that. All right, so have a great week, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. Oh, and check us out, of course, at Twitter, at AM Haunted, and Facebook's the same. Facebook, AM Haunted. Of course, that's short for America's Most Haunted. We'll see you soon. Thank you very much. Night-night.
Good night.